Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software, like Jira, Confluence, and Trello, help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. No matter if you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software keeps everyone connected and moving together as one towards shared company goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 372 of the Battery Power Podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It is Tuesday afternoon slash evening, October 11th, on the heels of what became a closer game than it was most of the way. The Braves losing at home to the Phillies in game one of the NLDS by a final score of 7-6, a brief comeback bid in the ninth inning and all that fun stuff. But at the end of the day, the Braves are now in a 0-1 hole in a best of five series. I'm sure it will be brought up on this podcast and elsewhere that the Braves also lost game one of the NLDS last year on the way to the World Series, but at the very least, not what anybody wanted here in Braves country. And I'm joined on this recap podcast by my friend and regular co-host, Scott. Eric Cole is here. Hello, sir.
I was about to say, I mean, like, look, we're both very handsome men, so it's very easy to mix us up, Brad.
I'm tired, Eric. I'm already tired. It's the first day. I'm done. And yeah, here we are. It was not a whole lot of fun today for anybody.
No, it was a tough day. And just in a lot of, like, some ways that were, like, kind of, like, uniquely weird and interesting, and some that were just more infuriating than anything else. You know, you just see, you don't get your best version of Max Fried, which is what you really needed, kind of going into what the Phillies are going to be able to run out for games two and three. The offense had their opportunities and didn't cash in on them. You know, it became interesting in the bottom of the ninth, to be sure. All of a sudden became a it became a real baseball game, but when Nick Castellanos puts up a web gem on you in the bottom of the ninth inning to help kill a rally, then you know you pretty much know it's not your day.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff we'll talk about throughout the course of the game. And if you're a new listener or someone jumping on for the first time in the playoffs, what we're going to do is basically just dive full on very deep into this one game. We'll talk about a little bit game two at the end of the show. But yeah, lots of angles to hit on. And generally speaking, I don't know that it was an unlucky game for the Braves. I've seen that word thrown around. I don't think it was really that. I think it was kind of, it was maddening. It was frustrating. They didn't get like thumped in this game. It was like they were completely outgunned. But at the same time, the Phillies played well. The Braves did not play their best, including, I would say, probably headlined by their number one starter in Max Fried. And the Phillies made plays. The big one at the end of Castellanos didn't necessarily save the game. But if that falls or that gets to the wall, it gets real dicey in the ninth inning. And a bad defensive outfielder makes a great play. And that was maybe a microcosm of the way the day, sort of the day and the game actually went for the Braves. So, generally speaking, we'll start at the top on these recap podcasts, and that's with Max Fried, who did not have his best in this game. That's not breaking news to anyone who watched or even followed along via Gamecast or anything else, but Max, this is the one game, and I said this before, and so did you and Scott on the preview podcast, this is the one game of the first three the Braves were really solidly favored in terms of starting pitching, because game two and game three, you're facing the Phillies' best guys in Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, whereas game one, Ranger Suarez is fine. He's a pretty good pitcher. But the Braves were lined up. They had full rest. And Max Fried traditionally is really good on full rest. But in this game, he was not. And four straight two-out singles in the first inning to give Philly a 2-0 lead. It was a little bit unlucky when you string them all together. But they all had expected batting averages of like 440 or higher. Like there were no flukes along the way there. And I thought Max's command was really not very good the entire game. And a stat that I saw making the rounds, Max had not allowed more than one run in the first inning since April 13th. That is 6 months ago, Eric, as we record this podcast in mid-October. And to have that start, it didn't like damn the team or anything like that, but being down 2-0 in the blink of an eye, not what you want at 1:05 Eastern time, whatever time it was when it was all happening.
Yeah, and it just felt like he was He wasn't right on a number of levels. When your command is bad and you're missing over the plate in like a healthy place where batters are more than happy to tee off on, then that becomes really problematic. There's a lot of people that are noting that his velocity was a little bit down. You wonder if a little bit if he's dealing with either some sort of injury, just kind of the rust of just not pitching in a while, which again, to your point, is that he usually does well with extra rest, but that, I mean, it clearly didn't do any good. He also had that stomach bug. You wonder, what's he can, how long it took him to recover from that. You wonder a lot about a lot of things because at the end of the day, Max did not look good. I mean, he was, some people were like, if Arcia, gets his glove fully on that one ball, I think it was by Real Muto, then, he gets out of that inning or whatever. But I mean, like, he was giving up like rockets, like multiple 98 plus exit velocity, batted balls in the first inning. That is a warning sign that one, your stuff isn't fooling them, and two, they're well prepared for you, and they know how you're sequencing your pitches, and that's not great. And you can even go further. There was like a curveball to Alec Bohm that I was convinced was going to get launched into a different zip code. It was a hanger, middle, and it ended up only being a sac fly. This could have been worse in a lot of respects. If the Philadelphia did a good job, with some situational hitting stuff. I did laugh out loud at Bryce Harper laying down a sac bunt, which cracked me up. Ended up not mattering at all because even on a double where he had moved a double on to the next batter where he was on second base, he still didn't score because he had no interest in trying testing Ronald Acuña Jr.'s arm, which was probably a safe bet because that ball got to Ronnie in a hurry. Again, just kind of silly things like that where Fried makes an error and he's usually a really sure-handed fielder, and that run that from Max, making a throwing error where Olsen barely got pulled off the bag ended up being the winning run in the game. Again, it was a frustrating game, but my concern primarily is just that Max just didn't look good. I fully expect that the Braves offense is, and we saw that today, that the Braves offense is perfectly capable of winning any single game. But you give up a game, you essentially lose home field advantage once you lose today. You have to play two games in Philadelphia, one of which is going to be helmed by Aaron Nola. This series just got a whole lot tougher, and it was kind of again by some kind of, and again you're right, it didn't feel so much like batted ball luck. It just wasn't good pitching. Jesse Chavez was notably not very good either once he kind of came in to kind of try to put out the fire, and he did not do that whatsoever. And it became frustrating, but again highlighted by the fact that just that really the more concerning thing is that there's a chance that you might have to have Max go a second time in this series, and coming off of this game, you're not sure how good you feel about that. So,
Yeah, I think you still have to have confidence in Max Fried, but certainly he was not very good. And it is fair to say, like, he didn't get a ton of help in certain spots. You mentioned the Arcia play, his own fielding. It's always funny to me that a pitcher can have unearned runs based on their own error. It's always funny to me, but I get why that is. It's just the only error made in the game was made by Max Fried. It was like, but he ends up with two unearned runs. Regardless, though, like he just wasn't crisp, and he could have probably give it up a few fewer runs based on some help around him, but we'll leave it there for now. The other theme of the day beyond Max Fried's struggles was the Braves leaving runners on base and missing opportunities. And that really started at the first inning. They loaded the bases with one out after a double by Ronald Acuna and walks by Austin Riley and Matt Olson. And then William Contreras hits into a very ill-timed double play to end that threat. Later on, they had the bases loaded again in the third inning with Travis d'Arnaud striking out. Basically, two bases loaded spots, one of which had one out, and to get 0 runs, that's how you squander opportunities. And then later on, we'll get to it in more detail. Another big spot where they kind of interestingly pinch hit for reasons. And those were the three spots of the game where they just had pretty easy chances that could have been at least just a chip away, like just get one at a time, and you're in much better shape in this game. But I thought, the fact that the first inning, you can kind of say it was a microcosm of the entire game, just because of the fact that three gets dinged up and they load the bases with one out and get no runs. And it's like, all right, that kind of day, I guess.
And there's a couple of factors in play here, right? One is that Dansby and Austin Riley had largely not very good days, but I do want to talk a little bit about the Contreras at bat, because if you get the umpire scorecard for tomorrow, I will be shocked if the number one like swing in that game in terms of a bad call isn't the called strike that was inside to Contreras in that game. It was, first of all, it wasn't close. It was not a close pitch. There were certainly some like ticky tacky, like borderline balls and strikes that kind of went, I mean, they went both ways in that regard, but that one pitch with the bases loaded turns a situation where it's very likely that he walks in that bat and pushes in a run, and then has Travis d'Arnaud come up, which, as it turns out, the next inning he led off the inning with a home run. And you know that you cut into that deficit potentially there. Instead, you kind of he gets into a different count. And look, you can't hit into a double play in that spot. That's obviously bad, but it changes the whole at bat. It changes your approach. How do you have to kind of start, you know, being more defensive for that, you know, on that third strike and all that other stuff. So again, I will be shocked if that won't swing that kind of that umpire scorecard type stuff firmly in the Phillies' favor, because that was a really, really brutal call in a very, very important at bat. So, and again, at the end of the day, he hit into the double play, which is uniquely worse. At the very least, if you can get the ball to the outfield, that scores a run, because that was only with one out. But when you have two bases loaded chances and you don't come up with any runs and you end up losing by one run, that's ultimately on you and the offense. And you know, the Braves did manage to scratch together 6 runs in this game, but it certainly didn't feel like a game where the offense was pulling their weight for the most part. And you know, combine that with, again, a lot of the sort of the nonsense that started happening. You know, it's just it, especially through the first, you know, 5 innings or so, it just felt like top to bottom the Braves were just getting outplayed, and you know, kind of doing some uninflicted stuff, which was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it. The full game, the Braves scoring 6 runs is probably appropriate. You know, they had 9 hits, they had 7 walks. That's a reasonable number, but until the ninth inning with one out, having 3 runs did not feel like it was supposed to feel based on what the Braves have done. Even through 3 innings, they had racked up 75 pitches on Suarez. They had 3 hits and 4 walks in 3 innings and had 1 run. And like, that's the kind of stuff that you just can't afford to have happen. And that's what bit them at the end of the day here. You know, we talked about Max earlier. He gives up a 2-run single in the third to go down by 4-1, a 4-1 margin. He allowed 7 hits in the first 3 innings. Philly had a very, very good 340 expected batting average, to the point earlier about this not really being super lucky by Philadelphia. They were hitting him hard and hitting them where they ain't, basically, as they say. And then the fourth inning, a further swing against the Braves. Freed comes out of the game early, and I was encouraged by that mildly, that they did not leave him out there to die further. He clearly didn't have it, and it was time to get him out of there after the one out double. Chavez comes in. I wonder how you feel about this. It's Chavez is kind of the neutral point, where if they had brought in Jackson Stevens or they had brought in even Dylan Lee, there would have been outrage about them punting the game. They bring in Chavez, who's kind of the guy right in the middle, because like, if you're being aggressive there, you go to Colin McHugh, or you go to even AJ Minter or something like that, to try to like, all right, this is a playoff game. We have a day off on Thursday. It's staying right here at 4-1. Instead, they go to Chavez, who's like kind of the neutral party. He did not look great, as you said before. They intentionally walk Bryce Harper, and then like, he allows a single to Castellanos, and it's suddenly 6-1. I didn't hate it, I'll say that, but I thought it was at least interesting that they kind of did neither. They didn't really punt, and they also didn't really push to kind of take advantage of that high leverage spot. Maybe they just trust Chavez. Listen, we all love Chavez. He's been awesome this year, but that was an interesting spot for me.
Yeah, I mean, with the two righties, you know, that kind of being like Dylan Lee has been good, for example, and maybe there's lefties in there, maybe that's a spot that you use him in. I think there is a lot of trust in Chavez,
There is.
and you know, but and you know, he made JT Realmuto look pretty silly, you know, to get him out. You know, they put Bryce on, but you know, again, this was like the Nick Castellanos game where you know a guy who you don't feel bad about the Jesse Chavez on Nick Castellanos matchup, which is not a sentence I thought I'd be saying in 2022, but you don't generally feel bad. But unfortunately, it results in a 2-run single. So that's 2 inherited runners that score. And Chavez gives up another run in the inning after. You know, again, it's just kind of one of those things where everything that could go wrong did go wrong for the Braves in this game, particularly in the early innings. You know, just couldn't capitalize on, you know, when the Braves made mistakes, the Phillies capitalized on them. There wasn't a big, you know, a big home run or anything like that. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't something like that, which is oddly enough what we were kind of concerned about with Phillies, that they have a lot of power and they certainly hit some balls hard today. But you know, it wasn't, again, like, you know, like they got torched for 3 home runs or something like that. It's just, you know, a combination of just couldn't put guys away, and you know, some ground balls got through. And at the end of the day, that's was kind of the story of the game, because you know, all the Braves' efforts later on, kind of in the second half of this game, were for naught.
Yeah, you mentioned it being the Castellanos game. One way to measure that, this is not a scientific thing to point out, Eric, but I got a notification pushed to me from ESPN after the game, and it started with the words Nick Castellanos. So that's usually a good indication of the kind of day that he might have had on a national scale. He went 3 for 5 in the game, in addition to the very funny, if you're not a Braves fan, catch to kind of seal it off in the ninth inning. All right, we have more to talk about, of course, starting with the fifth inning and a little bit of a flurry by the Braves, and then the Matt Olson borderline heroics in the ninth, and then look ahead to game two. But first, a word from our sponsors on the podcast today.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to help keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR, and legal, can stay connected and move together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
All right, Eric, I'm breaking here on purpose because things were interesting in the bottom of the fifth. You know, you mentioned before, Chavez allows a run in the top of the fifth. It's 7-1 before Dylan Lee enters, the inning ends, and the Braves come up down 6 in the fifth. Obviously, even as a podcast that always kind of pushes back against punting games, particularly in the playoffs, you're down 6. You are a big underdog. Now, we did just see the Mariners erase a 7-run deficit a couple days ago in the playoff game, and the Braves have a great offense, so it's not like this is out of reach. But things got a little bit interesting immediately in the bottom of the fifth when Matt Olson walks, Contreras doubles, Darno doubles, and suddenly it's 7-3, and there's a little bit of rocking going on in the Philly bullpen. Then Arcia walks, and Michael Harris hits the ball pretty hard, lines out, and it's first and third with two outs for Robbie Grossman, down 7-3, except Snicker had other ideas. Now, we're recording this right after the game. I've been looking. I know you have been too, to kind of see if we got any indication on why this happened. I've not seen anything. Maybe you have. I was baffled by this in the moment because Snit elects to pinch hit for Grossman with Vaughn Grissom against the lefty. Now, Grissom does hit lefties well, but that's the entire reason why Vaughn Grissom is on this. Vaughn Grissom, why Robert Grossman is on this team right now, and it's because he's a lefty masher. That's why they traded for him. That's why he started today's game against a lefty, because we talked about this on the preview podcast. They're not playing Grossman against righties in this series. I'd be pretty surprised by that. But even more weird was that they let Grossman face a righty in the previous plate appearance. Now, I know that was early in the game, but once the lefty was out of there, I thought they might even consider pulling Grossman. They didn't do that until a lefty came up in a big spot. So did you have a take on this? Because I've yet to see an explanation that makes any sense short of Grossman maybe being hurt. That's kind of all I know, but there was no indication of that either. So I just don't understand why this happened. And it's not an anti-Vaughn Grissom thing. I just don't know why Grossman is on this team and playing if that's not a spot he's at the plate in, because that's what he's there for.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm like, he either had to be hurt or like there was a firm, hard decision to take him out of the game after X amount of innings or whatever. And I don't know why that would be the case either. There were certainly a lot of people who were wondering why Marcell Ozuna wasn't pinch hitting in that spot. It is notable that Marcell Ozuna's numbers in general aren't good, and more importantly,
well, he has
and against lefties, yeah, and against lefties, he's been worse. So,
much worse.
It was definitely like, and it caught everyone's eye. Everyone's like, this doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? And as a result, you know, because if you're trying to make kind of an easier switch too, then maybe you just run Ozuna out there anyway, because you're going to have to play him in left field. And, you know, do you really want Eddie Rosario versus Marcell Ozuna in, you know, left field for, you know, a certain amount of time? You know, that seems kind of like almost like a push defensively, although that's certainly not a good thing either way. It was a very weird thing to happen. And again, I've been looking this entire time we've been recording this podcast for an explanation as to why that happened. And as far as I'm, you know, as far as I'm aware, it just, again, I think there's something going on with Grossman, because you're right. You know, they let him face the righty, which, again, not ideal, but, you know, it's early in the game. You don't want to pull the guy. That's fine. And, you know, he's come up with a couple of good hits against right-handed pitching this year. So it's not like a crazy notion to keep him in now that once they got Suarez out of the game pretty early. But when they get the lefty matchup that they want and they pull him for Grissom, makes me think that there's something going on with Grossman. And I just don't have a great explanation beyond he was probably hurt, and then they kind of just had to kind of fly by the seat of their pants to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some, not explanations, but like maybe like attempts to try to figure out what this might have been. One of them would be like, you know, if you haven't been paying attention recently, Vaughn Grissom obviously was super hot early in the season, but he's been pretty bad for a while, and also had only played once in any capacity since September 25th, and it was the finale that didn't matter at all. He played that entire game. But he has a 460 OPS in his last 15 games. And that's a small sample size, but it's not like they were going with a hot hand, which is something that Snit has done in the past. I saw an explanation out there that like Grossman had been like 0 of 5 in his career against Brad Hand. And it's like, I hope that wasn't what was part of the decision.
If that decision was made because of a 5 plate appearance sample size against Brad Hand.
Yeah, that would be
something. I have some questions, but so again, we haven't seen an actual explanation for it.
No, we have. And maybe that'll come, and maybe that'll come through the podcast. But I just, as we record this at 5:40 PM Eastern, I'm still baffled by that one. You could say, is it that big of a deal? Because honestly, here's the other thing. Well, I agree with you, and it's worth noting again, just the numbers are what they are about Ozuna and reverse splits. I mean, it would have made a little bit more sense to me to hit Ozuna there, because at least you can leave Ozuna in left field. The other thing about
exactly, that's what I was saying, it makes the switch easier. Yeah,
yeah. At least, like, I mean, I'm not saying that's a great option, but Ozuna, you could say, if you're Brian Snicker, you're like, all right, he's been a little bit better recently. We just, you know, it's a big spot. He's a vet, etc. With Vaughn, he's ice cold. He's not going to stay in the game to play left field. That's not happening. You're burning a guy who you might need later. And yes, they have Adrianza, which we'll come back to later on in the podcast, to play defense if they need something like that. But you're burning two guys at once. You're putting in Rosario on defense, who's worse than Grossman. I don't know. The whole thing just doesn't make any level of sense unless Grossman's hurt. So, and look, they're down 4 runs there, and I get it, and it's 2 outs. But they lose this guy by 1 run. And like, it's a huge thing. I'm not saying that it changes the game or whatever. Like, it could have, though. I mean, that's a moment that we wouldn't do a ton on, you know, in July, but in a playoff game, and just the nonsensical part of it, like we're just kind of baffled. I think people probably hear that in our voices. It was just like one of those things where I can usually come up with what Snicker is thinking, even if I don't agree with it. You know what I mean? Like, it's usually like a hot hand thing.
Yeah, it's just weird. Yeah.
Or whatever. But this one, I just don't have anything for you. I mean, maybe it's just the super small sample size of how good Grissom's been against lefties this year, but it's like 40 plate appearances. Like, I don't know. Anyway, we'll leave it there for now, but that is one that I'd be curious about if we get an explanation at some point. The rest of the game was really quiet until the bottom of the ninth. Like, the bullpen did its job in a big way, which should not be overlooked. And it wasn't like the big guns either. They didn't have to use Minter or any of the guys. Iglesias didn't pitch in this game. They got 5 2/3 innings with 1 run allowed from Chavez, who wasn't great. But then Dylan Lee, Colin McHugh, Jackson Stevens were awesome. Kept them right there. And you couldn't ask for more from those guys over 5 2/3 innings. And like, the door was open enough because they did their job, which is notable.
No, I mean, absolutely. Look, I mean, Jesse was uniquely bad because of, you know, giving up the inherited runners that kind of, you know,
yeah,
made things uniquely worse for him. But beyond that, you know, if the two guys that you wanted to maybe throw enough pitches in this game to, like, for example, make themselves unavailable for tomorrow, it would have been Jackson Stevens and Jesse Chavez. Now, Chavez wasn't good, but Jackson Stevens was really good.
He was.
At the end of the game, to kind of eat some innings, get some big outs, keep it close. And, you know, the guys that you really have more confidence in, depending on, you know, in some respects situationally, in Colin McHugh and Dylan Lee, didn't throw that many pitches in this game, and they were both good. So, like, you know, again, the bullpen did their job. I will say that I am heated, Bradley, about this whole Jose Alvarado thing.
I was ready for it for you. Go ahead. The floor is yours.
I have no idea how he keeps being able to get away with delay the game to have the mound rebuilt every single time that he comes in and pitches at Truist Park. I don't understand. It's just every single time that it has to be perfectly manicured for him just so he can just like pipe 100 miles an hour, and 50% of the time it ends up into the strike zone. I think it's some sort of gamesmanship is at play there. It shouldn't be allowed because every single other pitcher has no problems taking the mound and, you know, doing their jobs, but he has to go and have like delay the game 20 minutes just so that the grounds crew can come out there and, you know, give him a brand new mound so that he can pitch properly. I don't know all the rules in terms of what he's entitled to as a pitcher, but it's clearly being abused by this dude. And it tilts me to no end. Every time he comes into the game, I know that there's going to be a 10, 15 minute delay at least, because, you know, they're going to have to like bring like a bag of dirt out, and they're going to pound it down, and he's going to have to expect it with, you know, like his monocle or whatever, just so that he can be satisfied to be able to throw. But it's super frustrating that he's allowed to do it. And I mean, maybe he's entitled to it being manicured somewhat, but at this point it's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. You're 100% right about that. It's a theater thing, I think, at some point. I mean, maybe it's just a comfort thing. I saw somebody note that it could have been like where Fried was landing. I have no idea. The whole thing is crazy.
Not just when Fried pitches. Well, every single, yeah. Like, again, there's a bunch of guys that are in that game, and Fried was only in there for 3 1/3 innings. Like,
right.
Did he dig a gopher hole in there? I doubt it.
So, I'm sure a Philly fan listening to this podcast will think we're complaining about it. Listen, this rant would be in there whether the Braves won this game or not. I can promise you that right
now. Oh, 100%. If they had walked off in the bottom of the ninth, the second thing I was going to be talking about and ranting about was Jose Alvarado doing that, because it irritates me to no end.
It was it's just a very strange thing that you just don't see. We watch a lot of baseball, and it doesn't happen very often. So just a strange, strange thing. So, all that said, bullpen does his job, stays close. The offense kind of just went really silent for 3 or 4 innings. Even after early on, they were not scoring at a high level. They were at least threatening every inning, and then they kind of stopped. And then in the ninth, they threatened again. So Ronald Acuna running hard, beats out an infield single. Dansby Swanson shows some life after a bunch of ugly plate appearances before this, and singles to first and third and no outs. Now they're still down by 4, so a lot of work left to do. Riley strikes out in pretty ugly fashion. He kind of had a pretty tough day at the office. But then Matt Olson belts a 3-run home run. 4-14 feet, dead center field, great swing. He's been really good lately in a lot of ways. And suddenly it's a 1-run game with 2 outs remaining. And clearly, you know, the Braves are still underdogs at that point because they have to score again. But it was a different feeling. I was like, all right, you and I were talking about the podcast and coordinating. It's like, okay, well, we have to kind of wait on plans now because Matt Olson just went yard. And, you know, they threatened. It kind of reminded everybody it's almost more frustrating now because they wasted so many opportunities early in the game and to only lose by 1 run. If they lost by 4, it's like, okay, you can't really point to anything else. But when you had that big swing, and maybe it's a good thing that just Olsen's going to be still firing on all cylinders. Maybe that's the positive takeaway, but that swing was not quite enough, but it made it competitive and close down the end.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and he drew a couple walks in this game. He certainly has been doing his job down the stretch for the Braves. It's a little bit frustrating that Austin had such a rough day. To kind of, before we get to that, that swing is that, you know, Riley has been really good, really, really good against the Phillies this year. And, you know, against Ranger Suarez, who was very clearly not good. I mean, like, he and Max were in a similar boat in terms of how their command was going. The results were different for the aforementioned dumb reasons that we mentioned above. But, you know, you feel like he'd have some opportunities against, you know, a lefty who was struggling, and he didn't. He really, really didn't do that. And, you know, just to strike out in a big spot there was pretty bad. Again, that's been kind of the most disappointing thing, is that Austin's been kind of, you know, has very clearly faded. But Matt Olson, I mean, like, I thought that was a routine flyout. Like, he put a good swing on it, but again, it was kind of to the deepest part of the ballpark. He looked like he got under it a little bit, but that ball just kept carrying. And I think even, you know, Brendan Marsh out there was like a little bit surprised that he ran out of room and his back hit the wall and realized that ball was going to go. So, you know, a big, big spot from him. And then unfortunately, while Bill Contreras, again, after another suspect strike call in that at bat as well, ends up kind of golfing a ball the other way and somehow Nick Castellanos, who is among the worst fielders in the majors in the outfield by my, just again, to my eye, I'm not going to go through and look at it. A couple of the ones who really kind of hold that title were probably playing for the Braves right now, but you know, Nick Castellanos is not a good fielder, and he ends up making a sprawling sliding catch that if it gets past him, like Contreras probably ends up with a triple. And then it's one out, and all of a sudden you feel like that the Braves could really tie it. Unfortunately, that didn't happen, and you know, Castellanos's, you know, reign of terror continued.
Yeah, we have covered Castellanos in depth, so we'll leave it there for now. But yeah, that was, you know, if that falls, did they win the game? I don't know, but it would have been a lot more interesting and a lot more pressure on Philly at that point. But in the end, it's a 7-6 loss for the Braves. They end up with 9 hits, 7 walks, they left 9 on base. The 3 big spots, again, as we mentioned at the very top of the podcast, the 2 bases loaded spots and then the bizarre pinch hitting chance for Grissom. The bullpen was good, but you know, other than that, like takeaway wise, I don't have much for you. We'll touch on game 2 at the end of the show, but clearly a lot of urgency now, because very simple math here, the Braves now have to win 3 out of the next 4 without home field. Does it mean the series is over? No, and we'll come back to that in a second, but that is where we are at this point. We should at least touch on the roster reveal and the latest news with Spencer Strider before we go to the game 2 preview. The roster reveal had a little bit of a surprise, actually, on Tuesday morning. You know, we recorded our podcast on Sunday. Sean and Steven recorded an episode that's still in the feed right now and worthwhile to listen to as well on Monday. But the roster, as on brand for the Braves, they waited till the very last second to announce it. And they're only carrying 12 pitchers in this series. So they carry Adrianza as a 14th position player, which I don't love. And I think it's because of, in fact, I know it's because of Tyler Matzek being left off the roster with apparent left elbow discomfort. He's gone seeing a specialist at this point. He's not like shut down, but he's not going to be around for the series. And that basically left the Braves with a choice between carrying a 14th position player, i.e. Adrianza, or maybe carrying another long relief type with Bryce Elder or Kyle Muller. As they chose to take Jake Odorizzi, which we predicted on the show on Sunday, that was going to be what they would do there. I don't know how you feel, Eric. I definitely don't understand 14 position players with a DH in place. I don't understand what it would take to get Adrianza on the field. Maybe exactly like today, if Von Grissom was already burned and you get an injury to Arcia or Riley, then Adrianza has to play. But that's kind of like, it would take 3 things for him to actually get in the game. I don't really understand that call, but maybe you like it more than I do.
I mean, forcing yourself to carry a hero Adrianza because of you have some weird Rube Goldberg type plans for how you're going to pinch hit for like the left field spot or the DH spot late in games is really, really suspect. I think at the end of the day, what happened is, one, it is a shorter series, so it's kind of less likely that you have to lean on your bullpen so much that maybe that extra pitcher matters too much. And I think that if Matzek was healthy, like they would have carried 13 and 13. I think that's just what would have happened.
That, yes.
Now, that said, I openly question the wisdom of carrying Yahir Adrianza over, say, like Bryce Elder or Kyle Muller. Maybe you just have just decided flat out that you are not going to use those two guys out of relief ever. It certainly puts them in kind of a unique situation because they did have to use their bullpen a decent bit today, particularly a couple of guys who are multi-inning guys to, you know, cover some innings. So if Kyle Wright struggles tomorrow, things could get interesting, I should say. But at the end of the day, like, it wasn't like a move that I was like, I was certainly surprised by it, and I don't like it whatsoever. I don't think it's something that like moves the needle a ton for me in terms of like, you know, like, wow, this really hurts the Braves' chances.
No.
We can circle this discussion, and if like later on in the series, you know, they have a bunch of guys who are gassed because, you know, starters can't go deep in games or whatever, it's a little bit different. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think what happened is just that they, like, since Matzek wasn't healthy, they just decided that Adrianza was going to be the more valuable piece than another pitcher. I don't agree with that whatsoever, but at the end of the day, I think that's what the decision was.
Yeah. I'm not like super angry about this. I don't like it very much. I don't see the point of that with a DH in play. But I guess maybe the thinking is they have so many bad defenders in their key spots in the corner outfield, like your Rosario, Ozuna types, that they want a little bit more flexibility. But I still don't love it, and I would have gone with one of the kids just for depth. Because look, you know, there is an off day on Thursday, but if you get into a game 5 situation on Sunday, it's the third straight day. You might want to have some depth. Like, what happens if you have a guardian situation from this weekend and you have a 17 inning game? Like, I guess it's Odorizzi until your arm falls off, but It'd be nice to have another guy around that would do that similar duty, like Elder or Moeller, versus Adrianzu, who I would, if I had to bet right now, he's not going to play in the series. So that is maybe the indication of all of that. The other thing that was kind of, I don't want to say funny, because it's a little bit funny, but maybe not. The Phillies don't have David Robertson in the series, who's one of their best relievers, because he got hurt celebrating a home run during the wild card series. You heard me right, Eric. He was injured while celebrating a home run and jumping in the air. Thoughts?
Well, the weird pit player injuries, like, they are kind of funny. It does kind of like stink for him just to like not be able to continue to play in the postseason. Like, he can't play the rest of the series. He's just not on the roster, right? So that stinks for him, but it is kind of like a funny sort of like reason to be out of a series. It's because you were doing a completely normal thing and just somehow managed to hurt yourself. I will say, though, that it does matter a little bit, because the Phillies had to throw 7 pitchers today.
Sure did.
And you know, you have to like their chances of at least getting some innings out of Zach Wheeler, but let's say the Braves, you know, come out really mad and they have to drive, you know, they manage to drive Wheeler out of the game early tomorrow. They don't have a ton of those arms that they can really rely on out of that bullpen, especially if umpires do the right thing and just stop Jose Alvarado from doing whatever the hell he's doing. But I mean, Zach Eflin threw a bunch of pitches today too. He gave up a home run to Olsen. So like the bullpen seems vulnerable, and losing one of your kind of your better bullpen arms that you acquire at the trade deadline, you know, to an injury like that is something that could matter. Again, I hate to make light of an injury like that, just because, again, it's not like he was like, you know, like riding a unicycle before a playoff game.
Right.
I mean, he strained his calf and like just jumping. Now, again, that sounds like something that I would do whenever I would hurt myself. But, you know, at the end of the day, I do feel for him a bit, just because you don't want a guy who's something completely innocuous turning into something that, like, ruins your chance of throwing a division series. But it's something that it could very well matter, because the Phillies really had to dip into the bullpen today.
Yeah. And we talked about this on the preview too, but the Braves already had a bullpen advantage in the series in our minds. And while Atlanta lost this game, clearly, they didn't have to use their top 3 leverage relievers at all. Philly had to use a lot of their guys, and they're down one of their better guys already. So that edge is now magnified in my mind, especially for game 2 in particular. The day off should reset things a little bit in between game 2 and game 3, but I still think that's an advantage the Braves should have in this series. Speaking of other advantages, Spencer Strider threw up a mound today. He was unavailable for the bullpen, which is not a huge surprise. But after the game, Snicker said that his bullpen session went well, and they will check on him tomorrow and then figure out a plan for using him in this series. Now, we covered it, but in case people missed this, like, I think people are assuming he's going to start a game. I still don't know if he's going to, and they're being very cagey about all of this. If they're checking on him tomorrow, he won't pitch tomorrow, obviously. They have Kyle Wright going to start the game. But maybe they'll line him up for game 3 or game 4. But all of the intel, as we discussed on Sunday, is still like not lining up of him being like at full strength to go out and start at full capacity. Maybe he can throw a few innings. No matter what, him looking good in the bullpen is good news, and having him available is good news. But it might be as like part of a combined plan for game 4. And maybe is my guess at this point, or maybe they do it in game 3 if they have urgency and their back's against the wall down 2-0 or something like that. But I mean, it's all good news right now comparatively to a couple of days ago, but we still don't really have a whole lot of clarity on the plan.
Well, it certainly felt better when he was just added to the playoff roster, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't think that they even add him to the playoff roster if they think there's any lingering doubt that he can play. I will say that I don't necessarily hate the notion of having him as kind of a handcuff to Charlie Morton, who has looked decidedly human and has not looked good against the Phillies. And if they think that maybe he's going to have a short outing, then maybe handcuffing him to Morton after that, you know, that first, second time through the order or whatever, I don't necessarily hate that option. I also don't mind the Braves being a little bit cagey about it, because I think Strider's the pitcher that the Phillies are scared of the most. He absolutely dominated them this year. So, you know, keeping them in the dark is kind of like when they have to deal with him is something that I don't necessarily mind. You know, are the Braves going to just start him and like run him out there for 6 innings against us? If so, when? And, you know, like giving them any time to plan for him or anything like that. I don't mind the gamesmanship in this particular interest, because in this particular situation, just because of kind of what Strider could be. You know, again, all the news that ever since like he started throwing again has been good. It's hard to understand or really how much are the Braves willing to push him coming off an injury like that, because he's not like he wasn't severely injured, but he just hasn't thrown in a while. And the way that he throws is, I mean, you don't want a guy who throws 100, 101 just to be like, okay, you haven't thrown in a while, go ahead and get out there and give us seven innings. That's a hard ask of any guy. Now, how extensive was his bullpen? How did he feel? You know, what are the Braves what does the medical staff kind of feel about him just kind of getting back to normal usage? What are the Braves' thoughts on just kind of getting a guy stretched out and how much he has to do? All those things matter. We just don't know that information, and there's like zero chance that the Braves are going to share it. So definitely probably the most interesting remaining wrinkle in this series, other than whether or not the offense is going to show up for, you know, against starters for the Phillies.
Yeah, that all tracks, and we'll see what they do with him, but he's at least on track. And you know, they added him to the roster on Tuesday morning before he threw the bullpen. So they were at least confident enough to do that. And then there was a little bit of that sort of that final check thing on Tuesday. So that's a good sign. Last thing before we get to the look ahead to game two is that the start times are now available. Cue the panic of Braves fans. We already knew that game two was going to be an afternoon game. It's a little bit later than today. It's 4:30 start. Game three, also a 4:30 start on Friday. Game four will be a 2:07 Eastern time start. And then game five, if necessary, will be at either 4:37 p.m. or 6:07 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. It is scheduled for 4:30, and then it only becomes 6 if both the Yankee series and the Dodger series are over. So it looks like it's going to be a whole lot of afternoon baseball this week, which I understand people, we discussed it all previously, but there was more outrage today, and I tend to agree. And also on the side of the Mariners Astros series, because they have the same problem. Both series have no evening games, which is just, it's bad for fans, but we cover that at length on Sunday. So
it's bad for fans. And again, just kind of if I read the schedule correctly, there's only two games on Friday and they still have a 4:30 slot. Don't understand it whatsoever.
Same thing tomorrow. Wednesday and Friday, two games.
Just stagger the games. I don't understand it. I don't know why MLB just decides just to make it harder for the fans of the teams that are in the playoffs to watch their teams. I mean, again, I'd be upset for like Dodgers Padres fans if it was switched. Like, I just don't understand why they need to do this. You can stagger the games a bit if you're really that worried about it. There's not like this like multitude of baseball fans. They're like, I want to make sure that I can watch just one game and then immediately go into another game and watch the entirety of that. You want to make sure that the fan bases that are invested in their teams can watch their teams. If you make it harder, you're hurting yourself. I just don't understand it. We talked about it on the last podcast, so I'm not going to dig too much into it, but it's definitely frustrating.
Yeah, it's bad. But now we have clarity, at least until Sunday, when there's a little bit of flexibility there. All right, game two, as in very obvious fashion, is a huge one for the Braves after losing game one. I mentioned it at the top of the show, but the Braves famously lost game one last year to the Brewers and then won the next three. Now, this time around, the task is a little bit more difficult because in that series, the Braves lost A, on the road in game one, B, against Corbin Burns, who's an elite pitcher in game one. And this time around, the Phillies have their aces lined up for game two and three, and the losses at home instead of on the road. So the task is more difficult this time. In fact, I will just tell you now, all of the projection systems that I have seen, 538, Zips, etc., and all betting markets that I've seen, DraftKings, FanDuel's out, BetOnline is out, etc., all of them had the Braves as underdog in the series. Now, not a huge underdog, but when you lose game one of a five-game series at home and your opponent has their best two pitchers coming up in game two and game three, that is what happens. And that's why we talked about before game one how important game one was on paper, because that was their best matchup on paper and they lost it. So the sky's not falling, but reality sets in where you really need to get game two, and it is Kyle Wright against Zach Wheeler. I will hand it off to you, Eric. What are you looking for in game two?
Well, you need Kyle to pitch deep into the game, because that means that like he's pitching well, and you know, again, preserving the bullpen maybe doesn't matter quite as much, because the arms that you care about going into the off day are going to be plenty well rested. But you know, again, just pitching deep into the game and matching Wheeler, because Wheeler has been very good against the Braves historically, and particularly lately. He was really good against them this year. And this was the start that I thought that the Braves were the least likely to win, which was game two. And that's not a knock on Kyle whatsoever. I think that much of Zach Wheeler, particularly in this matchup. So this is, it's getting officially spooky. I still think that, I mean, the nice thing about Kyle Wright is that we've seen him pitch well in big spots in the postseason. And the whole, and you see some, you saw some life from the Braves bats late, and maybe that they can finally get over the hump and, you know, not leave, you know, like runners on second, third, or leave the bases loaded and not actually cash in on those. That's, you know, particularly egregious. And maybe that they seem to have a pretty good approach, or at least an understanding of how the Phillies are going to be attacking them. But Wheeler's a very good pitcher with real live stuff. So if he comes out there slinging tomorrow, like, the Braves could find themselves in trouble pretty quickly.
They could. And I still think that if you were lining it up, game three is more difficult because you're in Philly and you don't have Kyle Wright on the mound. And I think you have more confidence in Kyle than you do in Charlie Morton or whoever in game three. I know Strider's been better than everybody, but he's not been pitching. So maybe he's pitched game three. It's different, but no matter what, the Braves, I don't know. I have not seen an odds for tomorrow's game yet in particular, just the game itself, but you're facing an awesome pitcher in Wheeler. He doesn't really have huge weaknesses. Like, he's not been great on the road, which I'm not a huge home road split guy, but maybe that matters on some level. But, you know, all of his peripherals are really good. He's got power. You know, he's really, really good. You know, the Braves can be confident in Kyle Wright. I mean, I know Scott has been on the Kyle Wright train for a long, long time and ended up being paid off this year for doing so. He's done a great job keeping the ball on the ground this year. Kyle's ground ball rate is through the roof this season, which has helped him keep the ball away from going over the wall as well, which is a huge part of his transformation as a pitcher. That could help him against the Phillies, who are still a power-based team. And today they really weren't, but most of the time they still are. So we'll see. But at minimum, you're hoping for a split starting pitching wise, you know, in terms of objectively, I think Wheeler is better than Kyle. That's not a shot at Kyle. I just think Wheeler's better, but at least you have a good pitcher in Kyle Wright lined up, which is helpful. And you're still at home and it should be rocking down there at Truist, knowing the urgency level. I guess the only question about Wednesday's game, I should say, is who's going to play left field and DH. We saw it today. It was Contreras and Grossman against the lefty, but now it'll be righties again. And I kind of think it's going to be, we'll see, Ozuna and maybe Rosario. I don't know if they're going to do Contreras or not tomorrow. I mean, my thoughts are very clear on the last podcast. I want to see Contreras. And if you're just dead set on playing Ozuna, play him in left. But that's a question for Wednesday morning that we will not know until then. Other than that, I mean, the numbers are what they are. I mean, I still think if I had to pick the series right now, I would lean Braves ever so slightly. But the confidence level has to be just by nature of math. This is not us not believing in the Braves. This is not us thinking the Braves are any worse today than they were yesterday. But this is the problem with short series and baseball. Baseball is a kind of a random game in a lot of ways. And when you lose game one, especially at home, the trek is uphill. Now, if you win Wednesday, I think most people will then pick the Braves again in the series. But yeah, that assumes a victory that you cannot assume. So it's a huge one. We don't want to overstate it either. Like, the series is not over if they were to lose on Wednesday. We've seen the Braves win three games in a row. We saw them sweep the Mets when they kind of had to sweep the Mets just a week and a half ago at this point. But game two is a virtual must win. I never want to call it a must win because the series won't end if they lose. But let's just say 1-1 and down 0-2 are very different outcomes.
Yeah, exactly. And again, we've seen this Braves team perform well against really good pitchers. So I know that I'm a little bit doomer about, you know, having to go against Wheeler. But I mean, I did not feel good about the Braves' chances at all going into that Mets series that they had to sweep it when you have Scherzer and DeGrom on the mound. And they ended up doing that. So, you know, at the end of the day, Wheeler's going to have to execute pitches. Whether or not he can do that is remains to be seen. And the Braves just have to do what they've done all season, which is just, like, produce. You know, at the end of the day, this is going to kind of come down to what version of Kyle Wright we get. Because this is a dangerous Phillies team, and you know, if he's the version of Kyle Wright that, you know, lets things get away from him, and you know, and hangs mistakes to the wrong guys, the Phillies have some guys in their lineup that you really can't make mistakes to. So I predicted this series for the Braves in five. I expected close games. I didn't expect this version of the close game that we got today, but I don't expect tomorrow to be any different. I think it's going to be a close game, and hopefully the Braves can edge it out.
Yeah, and for a little bit of optimism on the way out here of the podcast, I just looked this up, and the game two odds are available. The Braves are actually favored in the market, I think, just based on urgency, based on home field, et cetera, and the Braves being a better baseball team than the Phillies, of course, which is definitely true by this season. The Braves are favored, at least slightly, in that game on Tuesday. So a big one. We'll have full coverage after the game is over. I don't know if it'll be exactly on the final out like it was today because of the weird start time. 4:30 is kind of in between. I think it's going to be me and Scott is the plan on Wednesday. Give Eric a day off for once in his life, and we'll have full coverage, I can promise you, on Wednesday. But that's all I got, Eric. Anything to add on the way out here other than just hopes and prayers for Wednesday?
If the Phillies want to keep having Bryce Harper lay down Zach Bunts in big spots.
Oh, please, the bunting. I got a text, by the way, during the show. I will not say who it was from, although you know this person. And the quote was, "I am absolutely dying at the Bunts being credited for the Phillies win."
Oh, so I think I know. We'll talk after we get off, but I think I know who it is. All right.
So apparently there was some media coverage. I logged off as soon as the game was over and we started recording. Apparently there were some takes flying places nationally or TV or whatever about how the Bunts were a big part of the success of the Phillies today. That please bunt, Phillies. I'll take the math advantage on that all day long. Please bunt.
Yep.
Bryce Harper in particular.
Yep. Mute the broadcast. You'll be happier. That's all I've got.
Yeah. People are mad about that, but I'm going to leave that for another day. A Braves legend people do not like in the booth. That's okay. Okay. Eric, thank you for joining me on this podcast. As for everybody else, please subscribe to the show. If you are a new listener, welcome aboard. We would definitely encourage you to check us out more regularly by subscribing across platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all those fun places. Also check out all the written content of our website at batterypower.com. Fantastic cover to cover Braves coverage, including minor league stuff from Eric and friends. Yes.
I have one thing I have to note here, and this just came over, okay?
Love it. Here we go.
A quote from Jose Alvarado.
Okay? Oh, no.
I'll close out the show with this. Alvarado said that the chirping he was hearing from the Braves dugout was coming from Guillermo Heredia. He said Heredia needs to respect the game more and plans on talking to him about it tomorrow. He feels he deserves respect for how he's pitched over the last few months.
Whew. All right. That's going to go over well.
Please get a camera on that interaction. Bally, we have friends at Bally. We have friends on the broadcast. Just put a camera and make sure that gets seen because that is going to be hysterical. Okay, that's all I've got. All right, I'm done now.
No, thank you for that. That's fantastic news on the layout. But yes, my sentiment still applies. Please subscribe to the podcast. Check out the written stuff at batterypower.com. Follow us on Twitter at batterypowersbn. Follow Eric on Twitter at leprechaun. Follow me on Twitter if you'd like to at btroland. And see you all after the game on Wednesday.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.